I will call Government Operations Reform and Technology and Elections to order. The first bill on the agenda is House File 465. Representative, do we have a quorum?
Not yet.
President Perez, we don't have a quorum, but why don't you go ahead and present your bill, and then if there's testimony to it and we have a quorum, I'll make a motion.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members. I think that this is a pretty simple bill, if there is such a thing. I was approached by a group of nonprofit firefighters who came to me with a problem. And the problem basically was that when purchasing equipment, they are a small fish in a rather big big pond. When it goes to purchasing equipment, they are seeking the ability to... Well, what happens basically is when a state fire department or any other county or municipality looks to buy equipment, they go through the bidding process. And the bidding process, they establish the fairest market value for these items, and then they go ahead and make that purchase. What I believe is this bill does is it allows nonprofit firefighters to purchase equipment at that same agreed-upon price. And so what this would do is not only allow them to get a better deal on the equipment that they need to do their job, but also free up some resources that they might also make other investments to help them in their fighting of fires as well. So the bill just allows them to purchase the equipment at the agreed upon price that other groups who do the very same job do. So I guess that's my understanding of the bill. I do have a fire chief here to testify if there is
time. Lieutenant Perez, while he's here, why don't we have him testify?
Okay.
So welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Niall Zickman. I'm the fire chief, Spring Lake Park Plain. Longview Fire Department, that is a nonprofit corporation in the state of Minnesota. There's approximately somewhere between 80 and 100 nonprofit fire corporations in the state. And this issue had come to me through the Hamel fire chief, a gentleman by the name of Brandon Guest. They were in the process of trying to purchase a utility vehicle this past year, and they discovered through that process that they weren't allowed to buy off the state contract system. And that system is important as any purchase, large purchase, you're required to prepare specifications, advertise for that, put it out for bid, do a formal bid opening, analyze those specifications, then do the formal bid awarding, where if you can simply buy off the state contract, that's already been done, plus to get the economies of scale and get the best possible price. So it is a matter of efficiency. Somewhere in the statute when it was first drafted, nonprofit fires, because we're a small group out of 800 fire departments, 80 to 100 of us, we've gotten forgotten about before. One example, previously we weren't always covered by the Nonprofit Tort Act, the Municipal Tort Act, so we've been extended that. So we're simply seeking that same latitude, enjoyment of buying off those state contracts. We're, as a group, pretty much funded by taxpayer dollars. My department's 100% taxpayer funded through contracts with those three cities. Lake Johanna would be another example of a nonprofit in the metro area. They cover Shoreview, Arden Hills, North Oaks. Little Canada's a nonprofit. Hamel Fire's a nonprofit. And Oakdale in the metro area. The majority of them are up on the Arrowhead region. And with that, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I totally misunderstood this then, because I was reading it. I was thinking about fire districts where you go and you purchase equipment. There was some legislation a few years ago that created fire districts to allow folks to band together to buy a pumper that they could share and things like that. This isn't that at all, though, is it?
Mr. Zickman?
Chairman, Representative
Emmer.
Emmer,
yeah.
That's correct. This is just to allow those that are already organized as nonprofits to purchase off the state contract. And the state, has extensive bidding contracts, everything from soap all the way up to automobiles and airplanes and everything in between. It just allows us to buy off that system. If, for example, we wanted to buy a Chevy, what does Chevy make, a Tahoe, or is that a Ford product? Whoever has the contract, we can call that dealer, say, we want to order one of those, what's the price? And then that price has already been negotiated, it's already gone through that bidding process, they've already got the economies of scale, and you can just order it. Absent that, you have to go through a very you know, expansion of that specification, that whole bidding, the award, got to go to council, you know, et cetera. So it's got nothing to do with the organizational structure and how we organize fire districts. It's just when we wanted to go make a purchase. The statute we had to amend seems a little odd, but there's a reason, you know, that we're amending the statute, because that's what the state recognizes.
Representative Emmer.
Okay. The only other question then, Mr. Chairman, would be, I'm concerned a little bit, because that last statement suggests that we're going to bypass the council-type exposure. It seems to me that even though these are nonprofit organizations, when I sat on a city council, it was important that we had an open discussion about what vehicles were being purchased, what vehicles were being sold, since it was actually the public that was going to be paying for them. And you're suggesting now, I have no problem with the concept that you get the state negotiated price, discount, whatever, but it seems that you have to have some type of public display or public open discussion of what you're doing.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Member, it wouldn't bypass the decision to allocate the money. So the council would still have to approve the purchase, you know, the funds to purchase. This would just allow to get the best price possible on the purchase.
Thanks. Okay. Representative Morgan, I think we have a quorum. Do you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move passage of HF 465 and re-referral to the Local Government and Metro Affairs Committee.
Okay. Is there any further discussion on this bill? Anyone wish to testify or again? Seeing none, then Representative Morgan renews his motion to pass House File 465 and re-refer to Local and Metropolitan Affairs. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I think I saw Representative Tilbury out in the hall.
Yeah, Stephen's out there.
Go get him. And
Mr. Chair, take this.
Yeah, Representative Martin.
May I take this opportunity to move the minutes from the last meeting?
You may. I assume you've read them. And
yes, I have.
Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion prevails.
Thank you, Chair.
Welcome to the committee, and I think what we'll do is get your bill before us. So, Representative Morgan?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move HF 222 for passage and referral to Finance Committee.
All right. Representative Tilbury, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and present your bill.
Representative Tom Tilbury, and I'm looking at House File 222, and I'm going to bring up some testifiers for that, and I'll introduce them. But just give you a little overview of the bill. This bill allows former University of Minnesota heating plant employees who transferred to Foster Wheeler Incorporated in 1992 to participate in the state health insurance group at their own expense. This bill would make nearly all of the transferred employees eligible to participate in the state health insurance group. So what I understand that happened is that the University of Minnesota decided to get out of the steam plant business and transferred that job or responsibility to Foster Wheeler Incorporated. However, the employees that were at the University of Minnesota then were transferred to the Wheeler group and just continued on. Now, in 1993, there was a law that defined that the transferred U of M Foster Wheeler employees as state employees for the purposes of participating in the state retirement plan, but there was no similar legislation that was passed regarding the state's health insurance plan. And so that's really what's going on with this bill. Now, the people that I wanted to bring up and just have them mention who they are and what happened to them.
Representative, why don't you bring them up right now, and we can have them sit next to you, and then one by one, why don't they introduce themselves and present their position on House File 222. So welcome to the committee, whoever wishes to go first, and then just identify yourself for the record.
Sure. My name is Tom Kaler. It's K-O-E-H-L-E-R. I'm the business manager of the International Brotherhood Electrical Workers Local 160. We have approximately 3,000 members in Minnesota. Our single largest group is like the Xcel Energy employees here in Minneapolis up through St. Cloud, but we also represent a number of co-ops, Minnesota Valley, Wright Hennepin, Conexus. We have statewide line construction jurisdiction and tree trimmers like that are on electric utility industry right away. As described here, these employees were transferred from state employees to private industry employees, Foster Wheeler, Twin Cities. At that time, we did collectively work with the University of Minnesota to protect the people at that time with the MSRS retirement system. I don't recall, I was part of that, I don't recall anybody ever thinking about when they retired, they would lose that health care coverage. As you know, at that time, most of them were far from retirement. Since then, we've had some retirements, and the question has been raised. Who we're trying to protect is just a fine number. There's approximately 53 employees down there right now, still working. Approximately 25 of them are in the MSRS. We've negotiated new retirement plans for the new hires that weren't MSRS. A number of them have been trying to find medical coverage as they retired. The number was larger, of course. We've had some that have died since then. So that's basically all we're looking for, is to protect that number. I sorry I didn't get an exact number, but it will not increase over time. We're not looking to protect the new hires. Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. And who is next?
I'll go next. I'm Jane Sandberg. I'm the wife of a retiree. And basically what happened with us is my husband had a stroke and was forced to retire. And along with all the other medical issues that we were faced with, the constant therapies and things like that, we were also faced with then trying to find medical coverage. Our only choice really was the COBRA. It was very expensive, and so my husband does not get to go back to work, and we felt that where he had worked for the state of Minnesota and others who worked for the state were given an option to join a group plan, we believe that we too should have been given that option, at least a choice on it. And there, like Tom said, it's a limited number of people who are excluded. They've retired for various reasons. My husband was forced into retirement with his stroke and does not get to go back to work. But others who have chosen to retire early also are really in a predicament with that. So we would like to not be excluded.
Thank you. And is there one more? One more individual?
No.
Oh, that's it. Okay. It's Mr. Sanger. Yes, sir.
I don't speak for my problem. I tried to anyway, but I'm the one that she's referring to that retired from Foster Wheeler because of my stroke. And
yes, sir. Well, thank you for coming today. Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? Come on down. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Thank you. My name is Nathan Morocco, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of this House file. I work for the Department of Employee Relations. I'm the manager of the State Employee Group Insurance Program. The State Employee Group Insurance Program is a governmental employer group program serving all state employees. We have about 50,000 employees, 120,000 members within our group. The SEGIP program, the State Employee Group Insurance Program, is allowed a de minimis number of non-governmental employees into the program. We do have some quasi-state agencies that are part of the program, such as the Historical Society and State Fair Board and others. The group that has come forward today is a private entity, and as such would not be considered a governmental group. These folks really, I think, have a nexus, not necessarily to the state of Minnesota, but perhaps closer to the University of Minnesota. This is a group that used to be part of the CGIT program, and they did leave in 2000, both for the active and for the retirees. And so as such, they are no longer with the state of Minnesota. As a result of bringing this type of group in, we are at risk for being in violation of this de minimis number. And we would also be required to do other things, such as reporting on GASB. This would be a liability that would go towards the state, because these are retirees and we would need to report on that. In terms of what this may do to our program, putting it in jeopardy, it could default us out of a governmental program, which would subject us to things like ERISA and becoming a multi-employer program. So as such, I just simply wanted to state what this could potentially do to the state employee group insurance program.
Any questions? Representative Emmer.
Thank you. I think this is for Mr. Morocco.
Yes.
So are you suggesting, there were two parts to what I heard you say, actually there's three. One, these are private employees, but then you referenced they're more closely related to the University of Minnesota than they would be to the state of Minnesota. My understanding is the university has its own health program. Is that your understanding,
Mr. Morocco?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. Yes, that is my understanding, is that they do have, the university does have its own program, which includes coverage for active as well as retired employees.
This one is for Representative Tilbury. Sir, at the beginning of your presentation, I think, you were, actually it was the, by Mr. Kohler, when he was talking about the negotiation when these employees became private employees, nobody contemplated that they would, I think he said contemplated they wouldn't have health insurance upon retirement. Have you presented this to the University of Minnesota and their program?
Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, no, I have not presented it to the University of Minnesota. This is the first that I've seen of this particular bill, but it was presented, or actually it was brought forth by Representative Bernardi, I believe last session, at least she was trying to get that heard.
Well, then, last one, Mr. Chairman, this would be for Mr. Kohler. Based on the negotiations that he understood for his membership, shouldn't this be more appropriately presented to the University of Minnesota and their program, especially since it appears it could put the state program at risk?
Mr. Kohler?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the unfortunate part is I don't have a collective bargaining agreement with the University of Minnesota. We have had conversations with them, but basically it's goes nowhere because, like I said, the employees are Foster Wheeler employees today. We don't represent U of M. We don't have a labor agreement with them. So it's been difficult to negotiate in that sense.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, but Mr. Kohler, I thought you said there was a negotiation that took place when the University of Minnesota decided to get out of the steam plant business. I thought you said there was a negotiation that took place where some of these U of M employees ended up being employees of Foster, whatever it's called, Foster Wheeler. But wouldn't it be subject to that agreement as opposed to a collective bargaining agreement?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm sorry if I misled you. We didn't negotiate that. Foster Wheeler, in their agreement with the university, agreed to work with them, and then once we became their representatives, brought us along to pass legislation to allow them to stay MSRS.
Representative Wolchek.
Chair and members, did the employees choose to contract with Foster Wheeler?
Mr. Kaler.
It was part of, Mr. Chairman, Representative, it was part of the agreement Foster Wheeler had with the University of Minnesota when they contracted with them to operate and maintain the plants that the employees went with. We weren't part of that. They were represented by the Teamsters prior to when they were state employees.
Representative Walter, is that Representative Kyle?
Mr. Chairman, there was a similar issue several years ago that I know we did some legislation for, because I know I carried it. This is when the University of, when Fairview Hospitals took over the University of Minnesota, and the employees there were able to retain, I think it was just pensions, but does anyone know what happened in that agreement and if there were any health agreements that were made at that time with that?
Representative Kahn, Mr. Shepard has partial recollection.
Better than mine, I know.
Madam Chair, members, all I recall is that they were able to get some special pension provisions, but I'll see if I can find it in the statute.
Representative Kahn, I see nodding in the audience, too, on that one, so that would appear.
Okay. What does nodding mean?
Yes. I think the agreement with Mr. Shepard and
would take
that nod.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me just point out then, you know, and I know there was no obligation to do this pension benefit, but it was, I would say, negotiated through the legislature. I would say, particularly when we're looking at the problems that we're looking at with the health benefits in the city of Duluth, that to make this step now for this group in health benefits starts opening up another group. I know that these are probably very few number of employees. Sorry, I came late, so I didn't hear how many they are. But I would tell you that the ones at the University Hospital and Fairview was probably a much, much larger group. And, you know, anything that we ever do with pensions, and I would assume now with retirement health care benefits, is kind of like being a little bit pregnant. Everything is always done by example. And so if you ever do it for one group, you will then have that held up to you always that this needs to be done for a group in similar circumstances, which is why I asked what happened in that previous
arrangement. So, Representative Kahn, you're saying you carried the legislation for one group?
For pension, yes.
For
and
pensions.
I think it was just for pension.
But your argument is not to do it for this one?
No, this isn't the pension. They have the pension benefit.
Right.
This argument is, the argument I'm saying, and I'm not necessarily saying, you know, not to do it. I'm just pointing out that that's a very difficult and slippery slope, and we're already in problems with it in Duluth, and that if we do it for this group, there's another potentially very much larger group that would immediately sit up and say, well, why wouldn't you do it for us?
Should the bill pass today, it's going to finance, so I assume that discussion should it pass today. And we have Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Morocco, in your answer to Representative Emmer's question, I guess I got confused. You talked about if these employees were still U of M employees, would they be able to buy into the Cigna program, the health insurance?
No.
Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no. If they were currently with the university system, they would be staying within the University of Minnesota system as a retiree.
Okay. So they had, but they had that ability to buy into a group plan before. If they had stayed U of M employees, they would have had that ability. So we're not extending something that they wouldn't have had. We're allowing them into a program that to carry on benefits that they had negotiated prior to being separated from the U of M.
Mr. Chair, Representative, had the university been with our program as an active employee, they would have been part of CGIP. As a retired employee, they would have been part of CGIP. Once the University of Minnesota split in 2000, my understanding is that their rules would have worked and do work the same as ours. As an active employee, you get active U of M benefits. As a retired employee, you get retired U of M benefits, medical benefits specifically.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Morocco, how many participating members are there in CGIP right now?
Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair, Representative, currently there is approximately 48,000 active employees and 115,000 lives.
Okay, and that, and
Mr. Chair. For some more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That includes the lives then would be the people who have dependent coverage for their families as well.
Mr. Rock.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is true. I should also add that really includes, there is another portion of about 7,000 retirees as well. These are folks that don't really have any kind of incentive retirement benefit through the state of Minnesota, but are allowed to participate as part of, allowed to participate in the CGIP program. As part of that, there is some implicit subsidy that goes along with that, that we recognize as part of the program, that would also be transferred to these types of non-governmental employees as well.
Or somewhere. Yes, and I guess this question then is for Mr. Kaler. You said earlier you weren't sure exactly how many employees this would include. Is that correct? Do you have an approximation? Is it a couple of dozen? Is it a few hundred?
Mr. Kaler.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe it would be 25 approximately.
One more question, Mr. Chair, and I guess this is for either Mr. Kaler or for Mr. Morocco. Is there any history that would suggest that employees of the steam plant operation have a greater risk or history of health problems or long-term illness issues that would disproportionately affect the plan that they're trying to get into, to which we all belong, by the way?
Mr. Chair, Representative, not to my knowledge, like I said in my opening statement, we represent about 3,000 members in the state, and I don't believe their utilization of health care is any different than any of our other groups.
Okay, Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Morocco, do you have any data to suggest otherwise?
Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, I do not have any data on that.
Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Morocco, just to help me oversimplify this. What's happening today is that Foster Wheeler employees, retired employees, are coming to the state and asking to be added onto the state plan. I mean, that's the simplistic of your Foster Wheeler employee, retired employees. You're coming now asking to be made into the state retirement health benefits.
Mr. Rocco, I guess that's to you.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is true. Had these employees remained University of Minnesota employees...
I don't care about the history. All I'm saying is right now, as Foster Wheeler retired employees are coming, the same as if Klaus Anderson retired employees were coming and asking to get in the plan. That's the status right now. Outside employer coming and asking to come in the state plan.
Mr. Rocco.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is my understanding.
Any further, Representative Wolfgang?
Chair, members, I don't agree with that assessment, Mr. Peterson, because Krauss Anderson, in your example, those employees didn't previously work for the University of Minnesota. So, from my standpoint, these employees were working for the University of Minnesota. They weren't a part of this negotiation. University of Minnesota and Foster Wheeler had the negotiation. These employees were workers. And their pension, their medical benefits weren't considered.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My point is that when they made that decision in the year 2000, it created a divorce between that union and this state at that point. And had that divorce not happened, they still would have been with another parent, the University of Minnesota. So I'm not sure I'm understanding why we're even in this discussion other than that there's a bill here that's asking for something that is beyond my ability to reach that conclusion.
Representative Bolton. No. Representative
Kahn. Just another little piece of information into it. These employees were not, you know, dragged along in this issue. They were very, very willing and strong exponents of the Foster Wheeler taking over the operation of the plant. So it wasn't that something happened to them that they didn't have any opinion about.
Any other questions? Anyone else wish to testify for or against the bill? No. Representative Morgan renews his motion that House File 222 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No. I'm going to have to go for a show of hands here. All those in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed, same sign. 9-4. Seeing the hand count was 9-4 in favor, the motion prevails, and the bill is re-referred to finance. Members, we will not have a meeting tomorrow, but next week, depending on a number of things, we may have a series of meetings dealing with election bills. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.